Hello and welcome to Open Mind. I'm Cecilia Skidmore. What is your style of dress? What do you prefer to wear? What kind of landscape or environment do you prefer? At what time of day do you feel your best? What sense perception is your favorite? These are some of the questions that might help you understand your own preferences in how you engage the world. My guest today is Irini Rockwell. A few years ago, we spoke about her prior book, The Five Wisdom Energies. The wisdom energies include spaciousness, clarity, richness, passion, and activity, and they reflect ways in which we approach ourselves and others and the world around us. We generally work out one, when we take the indicator that she has in the book, we generally naturally come out of one or two of those, but we can learn to deepen all the other qualities in order to deepen our own self-knowledge, our knowledge of others, and making our life richer. Since that first book, Rockwell has been working with groups, large and small, and through that work has developed a set of exercises that help teach and deepen our understanding of the five wisdom energies. Her most recent book is a how-to book, taking the concepts from the five wisdom energies and applying them. It's called Natural Brilliance. Each chapter teaches about the particular wisdom energy and then has exercises that involve all our senses that help us develop each energy and see it in our lives. Rockwell is a therapist, a writer, and a teacher in the Buddhist lineage of Tibetan meditation master Chagyam Trungpa. She's also the director of the Five Wisdom Institute, where she offers training programs to enhance self-awareness, communication, and effectiveness through the five wisdoms. Welcome, Irini.
Thank you, Cecilia.
I guess I should be here with you again. Yeah, I should say welcome back. I just want to start with a caveat because you come from a Buddhist tradition, and because some of the language in the book is Buddhist, I don't want people to assume that they must be Buddhist or that it's a religious piece. This is a workshop for all people, individuals into businesses, large businesses, right? And it's just from that framework.
Yeah, I'd like to underline that. I seem to have found a niche for myself of really translating esoteric Buddhist teachings into what would be accessible to anyone off the street. They don't need any prior meditation practice or understanding of Buddhism or anything. My goal with both books, actually, has been to make the five wisdoms very accessible, as well as not watering down the depth possible.
Okay. I look at the five wisdoms as more or less personality types, with each having a perspective and a value of its own. Is that fair?
That's fair. That's a good place to start. What we soon get to, and both books point to that, is that we're really a mix of all five. And we have our own particular mix. And then we go on from there to see that actually the combinations of mixes are infinite. That is why we both can be somewhat predictable. In other words, we have sort of five energy systems, but we can also be very unique. Each of us are unique. That's why there is no set way of going about this. We have to find out for ourselves what our particular propensities are, our traits, our characteristics, how we interact with the world, what triggers us and we go into fear patterns, what turns us on, what is a catalyst for our opening.
So when you're calling them wisdom energies, what do you mean by energies?
Energy is the imperceivable ambient tone, the quality, the vibe, I love that word vibe, of people, places, and situations. You pick up on that whether you're aware of it or not. Let's say a courtroom that's absolutely tense, and the energy is somewhat maybe frozen within you if you have some kind of involvement with the situation. versus a very happy, open party at the beach. Those are very different ambiences. And what happens, and then there's people. There can be somebody who is extremely sharp and demanding and domineering, and another person, and we can have fear around that kind of person. And then there's another person that's totally open and welcoming and softens you. And we sort of want to be with that person. So the being able to understand the energy in yourself and in people, places, and situations give you an enormous tool, a set of tools with which you can navigate your world.
Okay, so then go into the five wisdoms, both the English word and the, what language?
Sanskrit.
Sanskrit word.
Yeah. Okay, so the first one is, we'll start with Vajra, which is the blue, and it's clarity. It's all about mental clarity, precision, accuracy, the capacity to have a huge panoramic, you know, five-year plan in your head, and also the minute details, like a Swiss watchmaker or a jeweler that just has the minute details. So that's mental clarity or clarity. And it's that way in people, and it's, we can also see that in art. We can see it in water. The water is its element, like a absolutely unruffled mountain lake, totally reflecting what surrounds it. Then the next one is Aratna, or richness, and this one is about abundance, generosity, a sense of totally being satisfied and fulfilled by the richnesses of the world. And you have that in yourself and hold it with some kind of equanimity, just you're totally satisfied. And you also do not feel separate from what's around you. And you can be, therefore, very resourceful and help others to be resourceful. I think Google is the ultimate Ratna, as well as having a lot of mental clarity, too.
What color goes with that one?
Okay, sorry, yellow. Okay. A golden, rich golden yellow.
And I'm going to ask you... first of all, I'm talking to Irini Rockwell about her book Natural Brilliance. What's the relevance of the colors?
That's very good question. It's Trungpa Rinpoche picked these colors. Well, I shouldn't say he did. He is coming from an esoteric tradition, and these colors are psychological colors. In the programs, in the trainings we do, we lie in a posture created by Trungpa Rinpoche and put on colored glasses. And the combination of color and the posture, working with the subtle energies of the body, meridians and chakras, we could say, have the power to invoke that particular energy. And it can come out in its neurosis, or it can come out in its wisdom. For me, what I've discovered is these postures are so accurate in that someone who knows nothing about nothing in this area can take the posture for 20, 25 minutes and come out with a textbook description, not the whole book, but a lot, of both the neurosis and the wisdom, or the, you know, the confusion and the intelligence.
By telling you what they experienced?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So yep. Is it easy to explain one of the postures?
Yes. And just to footnote that, for me, the postures authenticate this work. There's lots of systems and color systems and blah, blah, blah. But the whole point here is that what is genuine, and that's what I feel in these postures, that they bring out some basic authenticity within people, both their pain and their intelligence, their brilliance, their natural brilliance. So these postures are restricted. You don't just throw them out into the world and have everybody do them, because they're so powerful. And so we do have some guidelines around it. There are four postures that are lying down. You're lying down on your face, on your front, with your head turned to one side, left side. And I'm not going to go into all the details.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, Vajra. Each of the postures frustrates a certain energy. In other words, it brings out a certain energy, and because you're lying still, it frustrates that energy. So you're creating some, kind of like a pressure cooker by bringing it up and yet being in stillness. Another one is lying, you know, spread eagle on your back. That's the Ratna one, very, very open. So.
And you would wear glasses that would match the color of that particular type?
Yeah.
Okay.
Originally there were rooms, but needless to say, the rooms aren't very portable. So for the trainings I've been doing for the last 15 years, I've been using glasses primarily, though at certain centers owned by Shambhala, I do longer programs with the rooms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to the second wisdom.
So we have the Padma is the third one, and it's passion. And this passion is all about, it's red, and it's all about wanting to join, wanting to merge, wanting to feel one with anything, a flower, a person, a work of art, a piece of music, and it's very heart-opening. People with this energy are people. People love them, and they love people. So that's that one. And the fourth one is green. It's karma. It's called karma, and it's about activity. Getting the job done with as much efficiency and high technological, the latest and the greatest high tech, the most efficient means, timely and appropriate. It's galvanizing others around you to make things happen. So that's the green energy, very forward moving. And the last one, which is also can be the first one, is the Buddha energy, white. Spaciousness, or sometimes I say just simple presence, just being presence, authentic presence. It's the one that's most missing in our Western society. It's cultivated by contemplative practices. Meditation is definitely becoming more and more mainstream, and it's cultivated in meditation, but it's super cultivated in that posture, which is a crouching posture. And so it has the potential to be very, very expansive and also extremely stuck, more stuck than any of them.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Open Mind. I'm Cecilia Skidmore, and my guest today is Irini Rockwell, and we're talking about her book, Natural Brilliance, A Buddhist System for Uncovering Your Strengths and Letting Them Shine. And that was the one that I had a chuckle because I think it's the downside, but the downside is laziness.
Yeah. Ignorance, ignoring, denial, laziness. It's the most insidious in some ways because let me count the ways we are all in denial about one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhat of a protection, and that's a lot of what that Buddha energy wants to do. The world is, too confusing, too energetic, and you just want to withdraw. So you flop on your couch and turn on the TV.
So the Buddha, at its best, has an active presence. It's there. It's aware. It may not be doing or saying anything, but it's just being really conscious.
Yes, very very aware and accepting. Everything's okay. So it has a tremendous grace, a dignity to it as well. It has sort of an ancient feeling. Many spiritual leaders. This is sort of a cliched spiritual leader. Now, we're seeing a lot of spiritual leaders that don't necessarily manifest that way, but it is sort of the cliched understanding of a spiritual leader, a seer.
Kind of like the Dalai Lama, somebody who's just there and happy, seems to be happy all the time. But
he's
fully
time,
accepting,
yeah.
So when you're working with people, around these, what kinds of exercises do you do? You have them in poses and you have them wearing the glasses, but what other kinds of things do you do?
Well, as an introductory program, the thing that I mostly do is I give some of an overview, and then the main thing, it's a weekend, and the main thing people do is they get a taste firsthand of the postures and see how, you know, they can be very neurotic and very intelligent, sane. And I follow that with some sometimes aimless wandering where they take off the glasses, get out of the posture, and then experience themselves back in the world with just a sense of being, and bring in sense perceptions then. So, you know, like Vajra is all about seeing. You see the farthest distant thing and you see the minute particulars of the wood and other sense perceptions. So we do that. So it's a little more open time. And then I put on music. I've had the good fortune of working with several musicians and we have quite a few lists of musics, and I mix and match, and you know, always with the disclaimer that good music really has much more than one one of the energies in it. And then I ask people to color. I provide oil pastels and sheets of white sheets of paper, sometimes clay, scissors, colored paper. Jot down a poem. Jot down just. Jotting is a technical term for me. Just touch pen to paper enough so you register that experience. No journalese, no trying to figure it out, no analysis.
So that might be doodling or something. You're not about writing.
Doodling, mm-hmm. Yeah, doodling's fine. So write a poem. I've sometimes brought musical instruments that they can play in, but then it gets a little cacophonic, so we don't use that so much. Movement, any kind of movement. And sometimes, so that's the way I start people. And then the chapter in my book, Natural Brilliance, the fourth chapter, Experience Speaks Louder Than Words, that's where I really get down and not just have people encounter things, but actually guide them through these exercises. It's the third chapter. Experience speaks louder than words. And there, from my dance background, you know, I became a dancer when I was 8 years old. I was head of dance at Naropa University for 10 years, dance therapy, actually. I have a huge amount of material that I have now aligned with the five wisdoms. So that's what that chapter is about. It's a lifetime of experiential learning goodies.
So what describe some of those experiences bigger than words.
Let me see. One of the things that I've done is I have six elements of movement, which used to be part of my pedagogy for teaching dancers. And so each of the, I play with an element, each energy has an element, and one of the energy has an element, actually. So the six elements of movement and their corresponding wisdom energy is one thing I play with. So during the Vajra section, for instance, I put on the music and ask people to take bodily shapes. In other words, it's all about experiencing, you know, the shaping you do with your body to create some kind of, it's more geometric based. And then spatial design is also a dance element, a movement element, and it's part of Vajra, how things are lined up in space. There's classical ones, and then someone like Merce Cunningham threw the whole classical book out the window and created a totally different way of working with space. Ratna's about kinesthetic awareness.
Well, could you go back and describe that? I think that might be not clear to somebody who wasn't a dancer.
Which, the spatial design?
Yeah, the spatial design. So okay. I can imagine making my body into a square or trying, you know, making it into a triangle or some geometric shape.
Yeah.
But the second one was a little.
Yeah, it's the first one is like working with angles and curves in your body, and the that's the first one. The second one is more. I like play with the architectural structure of the place also. So if there's a window, let your body respond to that window. If there's three lights on the ceiling, look up and dance in a way and place yourself in a way that you are partnering with the space. So you create design through partnering with the space. Or if you're just looking at a floor pattern, just walk in straight lines and corners. Yeah.
So it's just about immersing yourself in the space of the room in various
yeah.
ways.
Yeah, in various ways.
I'm talking to Irini Rockwell about her book, Natural Brilliance. Okay, so continue.
So anyway, that working with the elements, Ratna is about kinesthetic awareness, which is really going inside to the sensations of your body and moving from there. And so we have to start, usually I start on the floor lying down and just allow people to settle in, and it's their time, their space, feel what's happening in your body, and then make slow move, you know, slow gesture or something, and see what that feels like from the inside. And then make that go into another movement, and again, feel it from the inside. So this is very different from, say, Vajra, which is more like ballet. You feel the form, which was my training since I was 8 years old until 21. This is more dancing from the inside out. It's moving from the inside out. It's like the sensations of your body are what are going to start to move you.
Okay, so that's really about internal awareness.
Help.
And really
yep.
getting to know your
inner
insides.
Self, yeah.
How does that help people communicate?
Well, you know, the felt sense is the word that it's very commonly used now. Eugene Gendlin is one that developed focusing. But it is being used now in businesses, for instance, too, is what is the felt sense in the body when you're communicating with someone? Now, in my first book, I call it the psychophysical barometer, which is a much fancier name, but mm-hmm. it's basically saying that your mind and body are connected. When you're having a thought and emotion, it is registered in your body. If you ignore that, you are going to have a tremendous amount of pent-up emotions stored in your body. If you can actually communicate so that tightness in your stomach is actually experienced, felt, oh, now I'm there. I know what's happening. I'm very jealous of that person or whatever. And so you begin to be your own psychotherapist. You mm-hmm. begin to be able to read yourself through your body tone.
And Gendlin, in his book, Focusing, he describes it in a way we all have access to. So we're always doing this focusing, but we are not aware of it in a psychological way. It's the kind yep. of thing when you leave the house and you can't remember if you left the iron on or the stove on. And then even though you may not be able to go back and do anything about it, once you remember what you did, whether you left it on or off, your body kind of relaxes.
Yeah.
And that's that felt sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So having a felt sense means that I can communicate more clearly with you about my... First of all, when I'm noticing I'm jealous of you, it's already communicated to me something I might not have known. But it helps me communicate with you better.
Yeah. Well, you're fully there. You're aware of.
You're in the present.
You're in the present fully,
mm-hmm.
not just with your words, but with your body. And I mean, at the end of my book, Natural Brilliance, I talk, I go into, I mean, this is the one that I found to be extremely helpful as a takeaway from my programs. It's called Invoking the Wisdoms. And I go through each one, each of the five, and we say, there's a syllable we intone and visualize the color and where that particular energy is in the body, and help to and contemplate the essence of that particular energy. Sometimes do a hand gesture or movement. So it's really a way of bringing this whole set of teachings very directly into your body. So you're an embodied presence. I'm really sort of on the warpath of trying to get out of conceptual learning and conceptual talk down. I used to do that. I did it all the time. I could do a Vajra download.
Right. It's about grounding people. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I would like you to let people know what your website is so they could go and look up the Five Wisdom Institute and see where you're teaching.
Yeah. That would be good. So it's Five Wisdoms Institute, and that's five is spelled out, wisdoms is plural, institute.com.
Okay.
And our training, our signature training is Wisdoms at Work. And, we're very happy about that.
Well, I want to thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you, Cecilia.
Talking to you. I've been talking to Irini Rockwell about her book, Natural Brilliance, A Buddhist System for Uncovering Your Strengths and Letting Them Shine. Thanks to Rick Bierling, my producer. Listen online at wgvu.org. Click on Open Mind. This is Cecilia Skidmore inviting you to stay tuned until next time when I'll discuss another topic of psychological interest. Until then, keep an open mind.